This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Two grants were submitted this week that, if funded, will support the digitizing of thousands of reel-to-reel tapes from the vast KBOO archive. You can hear samples of these priceless audio recordings on two KBOO monthly programs, Tune In, Turn On, and Remember, and Treasures from the Archives. An emerging partnership with Portland Community Media will bring KBOO to television audiences. In-studio videotaping of program hosts, interviewees, and musicians will be broadcast on various cable channels. The first program to be featured will be Buscando America. Stay tuned for details on when you can watch KBOO on TV in the near future. Planning is about to begin for KBOO's 45th birthday party. If you would like to help and are excited about fundraising, sponsorships, marketing, and coordinating major events, please come to the development meeting February 4th, 6 p.m. For more information, contact Lynn Fitch at 503-231-8032 or navigator at kboo.org. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to sponsor the Portland premiere of Who Bombed Judy Berry at the Clinton Street Theater, Wednesday, February 13th. The film will play at both 7 p.m. and 9:15. This new documentary covers the 1990 bomb attack on two Northern California environmental activists, which still remains unsolved. The film is a compelling tribute to Berry, a fiery speaker whose background as a union organizer put her in a unique position to bridge the cultural divide between forest activists and rank-and-file loggers.
I knew it was a bomb the second that it exploded. I felt it rip through me with just a force more powerful and terrible than anything that I could describe.
Again, that's Wednesday, February 13th at the Clinton Street Theater. More information may be found at kboo.fm/Berry2013.
Good morning.
Whoa, today's drone day.
Drone day.
Yeah,
everyone,
that was the flight of the
bumblebee.
Everyone
needs a drone day.
Oh, there, the drone day in America. First of all, we are going to explore the drone issue here in Oregon, which may surprise some people. I don't know. They're being built in the Northwest. There's a big push, because it's a moneymaker, for drone manufacturing in the Bend area. There's increasing evidence that drone usage, particularly to assassinate alleged enemies of the United States, is on the rise everywhere. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, from what we can tell from NBC News and a white paper that they got a hold of from the government, the following things seem to be true.
All right.
First of all, it seems that the notion of imminent danger is vague. That is, you can assassinate somebody without due process if there's an imminent danger to the United States, but there's no clarity exactly on what that really means.
I find you to be vaguely threatening.
Well, you scare me a little bit. Right. I mean, that jacket of yours is a very, you know. Anyway, and then there is the other idea is if you can't capture the bad guy. Now, the definition there is really vague because, you know, it's really hard to capture somebody you think might do a bad thing and is in Yemen or someplace.
Right.
So you can blast them out of there shoes.
Right,
but and their children, and their wives.
Why not send in a slightly bigger drone with a huge claw and just pick them up?
Oh, you're so imaginative, and yet it's possible. And finally, it can happen anywhere, which means, pay attention to this, folks, the enemy, of the alleged enemy, not with due process, not with a trial, not with the Fifth Amendment, not with the First Amendment, not with anything to prove the guilt except the wisdom of the State Department or the wisdom of the Defense Department, anybody can be blown away anywhere, and that includes on American soil.
That's all pretty scary.
Well, yeah.
Right. And to give a little context to this conversation, I want to read something quickly here. This is the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. It reads, "The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized." The use of drones in the manner you just described would seem to be in contradiction to that amendment I just read.
Well, and we have two guests calling us today.
Yep.
Representative Hoffman, who is a Republican, I believe. Is that
from
right?
The Dalles. I believe we have him on the phone right now.
That's correct.
Good morning,
Republican,
sir.
Republican from the Dalles.
Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much. You have introduced some legislation on drones. Can you tell us briefly what it is and why?
Sure, be glad to. Actually, I didn't have the idea of international espionage in mind when I was drafting the bill. And one thing I do want to set straight, I'm not trying to restrict the use of drones, per se.
Okay.
Because I do support drone use. I'm surrounded by the drone industry. We've got Boeing and In-Situ and the Gorge and Central Oregon, as you mentioned a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. There's a hotbed of development for drone technology down there. So from an economic development jobs point of view, I'm very supportive of the drone industry. Mm-hmm. I think for utility companies, for checking lines, for agriculture, for even police forces in connection with DEA or whatever to check for marijuana grows in federal or state forest or BLM property, I think there's a great use out there for them. My concern was in thinking, are there places where they could be used by a local police agency to tromp on somebody's individual rights? Are we remembering, with the use of this or the potential use of this new technology, are we remembering that people do have rights and you need to have probable cause to get a search warrant for evidence to be admissible in court? And we typically think of that when it's in somebody's car or in their home, but what about on their property in their backyard? You know, how open is the airspace above their backyard, and what can be used if information's gathered from a drone, pictures are taken, can it be admissible in court without a search warrant? And so that's the path I'm headed down, trying to figure out what rights do people have with the use of this new technology.
So does your bill differentiate between what you perceive to be legitimate law enforcement applications of drones and those you believe to be a violation of civil liberties?
That's where I'm headed with this. My bill, we're currently researching with legislative counsel to determine, what are the current laws around probable cause and search warrants and the airspace. When you get into airspace above your backyard, the first 400 feet, I believe it is state controlled. Above that's federal. I could be a little off on that because I'm not an expert and I'm not an attorney. As Senator Przanski that's on the line is. So I'm trying to muddle through to find out what current law is, and I'm working with the DA Association, the Sheriff Association, and the Association of Police Chiefs to determine what is current law and what needs to be tweaked to ensure people's rights.
Okay, I think we'd like to bring into the conversation at this time Senator Floyd Przanski, a Democrat from Lane County, who has also introduced a bill in the Senate addressing the same issue. Senator, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Joe, Abe, and John. Thank you very much, John. I didn't know you were working on it. I look forward to working with you on your bill and mine.
Sounds good.
Can you tell us a little bit about your drone bill, Senator?
What we did is I asked the legislative council or the judiciary council to get something into the pipeline. We call these placeholder bills. So SB 71 was written up to get something into the process so we would actually have something to work with in the future. Representative Hoffman has said, we're both looking, I think, in the same area. Really, our bill is going to end up looking at the conduct of an individual with a drone. I think it's very important for people to understand. I didn't get to hear Representative Huffman's comments before, but in the Governing magazine of December 2012, they're talking that the FAA has estimated 30,000 drones will fill the American skies by 2020.
So, wait a minute, 30,000?
30,000.
What are the projected applications of those 30,000 drones?
Well, from reading through here, it could be multiple. I think Representative Huffman has really covered the areas, let's say, many, many legitimate uses that could be used from ag to rescue operations. I mean, it's unlimited. I'm just astounded by the numbers. And when we started doing our research back in late November, it came very clear to me that we needed to do something early on before we had this proliferation of these type of apparatuses actually infringing on people's not only their private rights as protected under the Constitution, but also just the general security of the skies.
Yeah, okay. Let me outline where we're coming from, and my concerns are really, I think, profoundly constitutional. That is, we have already used drones to kill an American citizen and his son in a foreign land. We see from the white paper of the State Department that they're essentially saying that these drones can be used to knock somebody off under very unclear criteria anywhere, including apparently in the United States. And our concern, I think I can validly say for Abe and I, is the constitutional questions involved. Apart from the really serious cases of assassination, the whole idea of spying on people, you know, the privacy questions are very, very important. And then there's a minor question, the noise and the nuisance quality of having a having 30,000 drones in the skies. So you guys are not so much worried about the constitutional issues, or is that unfair characterization?
Well, for me, it would be an unfair characterization, because that's basically the bent that I came from. And I guess I ended up being actually Bill Taylor that the senator referred to. He and I guess, kind of woke up one night and had the idea at the same time, and the senator did it. And then about 6 months later, the National ACLU and the National Police Chiefs Association got involved and said, hey, you know, you're right, we're seeing some scary things here that could be used for misuse. Again, I think there are a lot of great uses for them, but I think from a constitutional standpoint, we do need to be ahead of the curve here.
Yeah, and if I can be more on an informal basis, John and I are basically, I think, looking at the same thing. Joe, as I would say you are, and that is constitutional rights that are protected for each citizen. But you also have to realize not only are we should be concerned about the impact of a public body infringing on those rights, think about your neighbors. And that sense, so basically we need to have something that's broad enough where that will deal with such issues such as trespass. And so where an individual can actually have the means to hold someone accountable for those type of acts.
Well, I can imagine my annoying neighbor's dog. I can get my little model airplane up there and blow the dog away.
I can also imagine citizens taking a shotgun and ridding themselves of the drone that happens to be flying by as well.
That's true. I don't know if there's going to be a season for those or not.
People have drones animal? Mounted above their fireplaces, right?
New fundraiser, ODFW gets to charge a license for open season on drones.
Okay. There you go.
I did not say that live on the air.
No, of course not. But we, obviously, you both and we are extremely concerned by the implications of this in terms of the Constitution. The fact of the matter is that we've already used drones many times to assassinate people who we have to believe the government when it says are enemies of the United States who pose an imminent danger, and there's no due process. These people have no, of course, being assassinated, they have no recourse in court, and there doesn't, I mean, it seems like a total washing away of some of the most important rights in the First Ten Amendments of the Constitution.
Well, this is Huffman, and I'm speaking strictly for myself at this point, but we could do another full morning show on the Patriot Act and my feelings on that.
Yes, we could.
So I'm trying to understand exactly where do you guys come together and where do you differ, and where are you on the constitutional questions?
Well, this is Floyd, and based on what I've heard John say this morning, it sounds like we're pretty much on the same page. Well, I can tell you the amendment that we've drafted, and we're going to continue to refine it, would be looking at issues on the criminal side, such as invasion of privacy, uh-huh. obtaining communications illegally, hunting, criminal trespass, and then there's going to be a section dealing with what public bodies are required to do, who they need to register with, and what is or isn't going to be admissible in court based on how that evidence is actually obtained.
But already we have warrantless searches with drones, essentially, using airspace. And my fantasy, and I don't think it's so far out of the order of things, is that you get really tiny drones, it parks on your wall like a fly. You don't even know it's there. I'm serious. I mean, there's no limit to this technology, it seems like.
And I would tell you that you should be very cautious as to what, not cautious, let me just rephrase that.
Okay.
You're right. The bottom line is, in speaking again with Bill Taylor, he has met with different people within the industry. He's also met with some of the local governmental officials. And the anticipation is what something that could be as small as a wallet could actually be much smaller in times, in future times.
Now, to your knowledge, do you gentlemen know of any law enforcement jurisdictions within the state of Oregon that are currently using these sort of unmanned aircraft?
I do not.
I believe in doing the research, Seattle has an agency or two that have already applied, and maybe they've actually been accepted and they're in use. I'm not sure.
Yeah, John, I agree. That's what our research shows. It looks like Seattle actually is in the process. I can tell you from my birth state of Texas, there are actually using them. Montgomery County is what's featured. And again, for your listeners, if they go to the Governing magazine, December 2012, there's it's a front page article, basically cover story.
Now, in developing these two parallel bills, I'm presuming at some time these bills might be combined in joint committee somewhere, but I'm wondering, have you reached the point where you have already delineated certain acts, certain drone-related actions that will be proscribed under this legislation? In other words, what will law enforcement not be able to do if your bills are passed into law?
Well, from my perspective, I think Floyd mentioned it correctly. Yesterday was technically the first day of session, mm-hmm. and we're trying to acclimate to each other's bills that have been put in the pipeline and trying to get up to speed on what exactly they say. I'm not going to speak for Floyd, but, there could be a point where we could merge the bills. I'm not excited, never have been, about trying to push two bills when one would do, mm-hmm. Or move any bill if we could just get the understanding and rule. I don't think that's going to happen here. I think we are going to need a bill, and it's entirely possible we could merge them together, and I'm very open to that, and I'm open to amending them to say what they need to say also.
Yeah, and I agree with John. I mean, the bill that we introduces a committee bill. Just for your listeners, at the first day of the organizing session, which was middle of January, we had, I believe, close to 1,200 bills that were read into the record for first reading between the two chambers. We're going to have another 1,200-plus bills that will be filed before it's all said and done. So clearly we don't need to be running two bills parallel. But the bottom line, first of all, John and I didn't know either of us were actually looking at this. Second, it's not uncommon to have bills start on either side, not knowing what committees they're going to be assigned to, how they're going to be received by the chairs of those committees. And so we will work together, I presume, to actually make certain one of these bills or some other bill that deals with drones will go forward and deal with all of the concerns that have been raised.
Well, I appreciate all that, but the bottom line for me, and I think I can speak for Abe, and I'll bet I can speak for the majority of the citizens in Oregon, is that this offers an enormous potential violation of constitutional right to privacy and due process. Are you both planning, assuming you put together a bill before conference, one bill, are you planning to make explicit the limitations of the use of drones in constitutional terms?
That's my plan.
Yes, and that's what our draft of the amendment actually covers. As I mentioned earlier, we already have sections dealing with invasion of privacy, obtaining communications illegally, criminal trespass, so all of these different issues. And then that's basically just generally across the board for, let's say, the private user, and then there's going to be the safeguards that we would require for public bodies to be able to, one, use those instruments, meaning drones, and two, whatever evidence might come out of it, how it's actually gathered will be another issue that will need to be addressed.
Well, right. I mean, at the very least, is there going to have to be some kind of judicial finding to authorize the kind of spying we're talking about? It's very invasive.
Yes. I mean, unless I guess the way I would look at this, I would say yes, with the understanding that there are certain exceptions that are currently under law, and if they can meet those exceptions, then it would be something that would be permissible. But, you know, that's the threshold, and that's why we really do need to have, I think as you're alluding to, that magistrate, meaning a judge, to actually be an independent decider as to whether or not someone has, in this case, law enforcement has probable cause to actually be doing that type of evidence gathering.
Well, you know, Michael Isikoff at NBC has gotten a hold of this large white paper, which NBC, MSNBC last night, and other agencies, news agencies, are claiming essentially circumvents all the constitutional due process that already exists, and that already we are using, that is, the United States is using drones outside of the normal constitutional process. And I don't know, I assume states don't have power over the federal government, but if individual states respond to this, saying, hey, you know, this is a constitutional violation, there would be at least some limits. And I think this, I think, this is me speaking for myself, this is a very serious problem, because you now have technologies that make things possible that a couple of years ago simply were impossible.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I'm glad you guys had us on your show this morning to talk about it, because I do view it as a serious constitutional issue that we need to get worked out.
Well, I appreciate
yes.
that.
Yes, and
I would also agree. You know, I've got 25 plus years as being a prosecutor, and one of the biggest concerns I have always had is making certain that our government is actually within the bounds that we have dictated through our constitution or statutes. And clearly, here in Oregon, we can set a framework as to how state agencies will be required to, let's say, act to actually perform their duties and to safeguard citizens.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that there will have to be a judicial bar that needs to be cleared before these instruments can be used in surveillance. And I know that both of you are due in chambers here shortly. So let me ask you, if our listeners want to make their feelings known on this issue, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, they can email me at rep.johnhuffman@state.or.us state.or.us. And if somebody's taking notes out there, my bill number is House Bill, or HB 2710.
2710.
Senator Przanski, how about you?
And the same thing, they can. There's anyone can get onto the legislative webpage. It might be easier, and that's the www.leg.state.or.us. Just hit Oregon Legislature, and you'll come up with a page. I would recommend them contacting both John and myself, since we have bills coming through. I, as the chair of the Judiciary Committee, can take care of those and make certain they get to the right people. But I think it's extremely important for each listener to contact their own state representative and their own state senator and tell them that they want them on board to make certain their rights are protected.
Well, we we obviously think this is an extremely important issue. We're disappointed that we don't see much in the local press on it.
I think it's just too early. As John said, we're just, you know, this is the incubator. We just started yesterday, technically, and I think you're going to see a lot more as this issue gets, you know, scheduled for hearings.
Well, I'm going to give you guys the opportunity to get to your sessions, and I do appreciate your time, and we will probably be reaching out to you as this progresses.
Sounds good. Thanks, Joe and Abe. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you both for joining us this morning.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
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 All right, well...
This is a hot topic, I think.
Well, I think this is very scary.
This is an emerging technology that, as you mentioned, has all sorts of ramifications for what we as Americans understand our rights to be.
Literally a fly on the wall.
Literally a fly on the wall. You know, or a bird out in the yard that can shoot you.
Right.
Right. No, I mean, this is no laughing matter. This has already happened. American citizens have already been assassinated with these things without due process, without charges being filed, without right to counsel, without any of the things that we as members of a modern representative democracy are entitled to.
I agree. And in fact, sad to say, but Obama, who we might call the lesser of the two evils at this point in government, his government has essentially authorized these assassinations. And the white paper indicates that it is not clear what limits there really are on the process of assassination. Maybe you and I talking about this right now have been, oh, what's that? Oh, no, it's just a fly on the wall. Anyway, that we are somehow, because we're questioning the wisdom of this, enemies of the state.
Indeed.
And I don't like that.
Well, it kind of gives you a little swagger, though, doesn't it?
Well.
Right. There's another whole set of applications we need to consider here, and that is use of these things in the private sector. This year's CES Forum in Las Vegas, which is a big trade show for new consumer electronics products. Some of these drones were on display as the demonstration models. These are things that are small, that are lightweight, that you can purchase and take home, that you can control with a smart cell phone. So I think eventually we're going to need to see legislation in all likelihood restricting the ability of citizens to use these on each other.
Well, yeah, and you know, stuff people may not realize, and I want to thank a very good friend of ours, Michael, I don't know if he wants his name on the air, but who has pointed out that Obama killed a wind farm in Oregon because owned by two Chinese individuals, a Chinese company, near the Naval Weapons System testing facility at Boardman. I'll bet you didn't even know there was a Naval testing facility at Boardman, because it could end up being a spy facility for the Chinese. In Oregon, a military contractor killed himself, private military contractor, feeling very guilty about drone assassinations. So we already have that. Yeah, we already have that. And several private contractors, and this was alluded to by our state legislative callers, are already building these. And I want to suggest something that's really important. Back in 1960, before most of us were born, then President Eisenhower, Dwight David Eisenhower, warned against the increasing military-industrial establishment.
Which
I would now call the military-industrial-congressional establishment, and said that this could become a more and more dominant factor in our lives. What has happened is that virtually every state in the union has these contractors. Everyone needs jobs. There's enormous pressure to tolerate things that would not be tolerable were it not for the fact that every legislator, whether national or local, has a responsibility to help job development in their region or lose their position. The consequence of that is we've compromised ourselves continually, small ways, big ways. We are now a military power unprecedented in the history of the world, and with an enormous military budget. And ironically, by the way, just looking at a larger question, the effort to reduce the military budget, the conventional military budget, not the drone budget, is going to mean loss of jobs in a recession, which means that a lot of people in the legislature, in the House, and in the Senate nationally are going to be very reluctant to cut military budgets because it'll echo into their electability at home.
It's ironic, because most of us listening to this show would like to see the military budget shrink, but at the same time, we're eliminating the one Keynesian jobs-creating program that we have.
That's true. Well, we got a lot
irony.
Of callers.
We do.
Got a lot of callers. Drones!
Let's take a breath. This is KBOO 90.7 FM. On your internet tube, www.kboo.fm. We're taking your calls, 503-231-8187. We're also taking emails, joeandabe@yahoo.com. Let's go to the phones. Norman, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Very well. How are you?
Well, not too bad, but I'd like to make some comments. One is on the airspace issue that you brought up.
Uh-huh.
I'm a pilot myself, and several years ago, just over a decade ago, the airspace issue was brought up on a lawsuit in Texas. And in it, the landowners were suing, no, excuse me, the lawsuit was in Colorado, and the landowners were suing the Denver airport because of flights flying right over their property.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of the suit, what ended up basically was that the federal aviation statutes, basically the sovereignty of the air, is prescribed in Federal Aviation Regulations 91.119. In it, it gives the floors of navigable airspace.
Mm-hmm.
And navigable airspace in the United States is basically starts at 500 feet and up.
Wow.
So the folks, they were suing because of the noise issue, but they were unable to gain any traction in the courts because of the navigable airspace issue.
So what you're saying is there's already a precedent, just
oh,
in
yeah.
airplane terms. Yeah. 500 feet is not a lot.
No.
No, but in the eyes of the FAA and the of Sovereign Skies, it is.
Well, I really appreciate the call, and that's good information. Thank you very much.
Well, I wanted to say about that because I'm also involved with unmanned and to increase their capabilities through aerial refueling of unmanned systems and creating jobs here in Oregon.
So you would have a kind of a drone tanker refueling a drone?
That is down the road, but no, I'm going to be working with an Oregon aircraft, a current Oregon aircraft manufacturer.
Uh-huh.
Here in Scappoose, and I've been working with Senator Merkley's office and Bonamici's office on developing this aircraft to be able to perform air refueling of unmanned aircraft.
Okay, well, this is, you know, we're just opening a door to an amazing industry, which is apparently growing in Oregon. And
well, that's been the problem, because I started this project over 10 years ago, and it still doesn't seem that our politicians, and especially their aides in this state, are really up to speed on unmanned aviation at all, because when I've gone into their offices here in Portland, I get the deer in the headlight looks.
No, I think that's very possibly true. I think when you get outside the Beltway, people are not real aware of what's going on. And
t- 11, 12 years ago, Department of Defense spent less than $250 million annually on unmanned aviation systems. That's the ground support and aircraft mm-hmm. themselves. Last year, it was just shy of, what, $5.5 billion.
Well, that's a mm-hmm. heck of a hunk of money.
It's gone vertical. But that's just not here in the United States. It's now global. And over 50 countries now have their own indigenous programs on unmanned aviation.
Well, now that's really an important point. You know, this is like any of the many things one opens up with new technologies, including nuclear weapons, of course. You suddenly find that a lot of countries are capable of these things. And in this particular case, it's economically very feasible. So once you have the technologies available, what's the limit? What's to stop, let's say, some enemy of the United States, Picky Poo Land, I want to choose somebody who doesn't exist, deciding that, hey, the cool thing to do would be to wipe out the nation's capital. We don't have a way.
Unlikely. But we'll
unlikely.
Get to that.
But, right. You know, my point is we don't really have a way of controlling this new technology.
Well, that's, you know, as if with all, look what happened when the nuclear bomb was developed. It opened up unimaginable different forms of how we can all kill ourselves. But now, you know, we have to start looking at how our applications of these machines,
mm-hmm.
and that's what they are,
mm-hmm.
how are humans going to control these machines in airspace above 500 feet and airspace below 500 feet?
Yeah.
You know, well, we certainly are still working on that problem, and it's going to be an area that I'm going to be addressing at the Multnomah County Library next week. I haven't got figured out a time yet, but when I do, I'll give you guys a call.
Yeah, give us a heads up.
And I'll give you guys a call and tell you when that meeting will occur.
Okay.
Well, thanks.
Multnomah County Library.
Hey, listen, I really appreciate your call. Very, very informative.
Thanks a lot.
I appreciate you giving me some time.
You bet. I'm just going to throw this in the mix, you dirty hippie that I am.
Dirty hippie that you are.
Wouldn't it be easier just to employ people making solar panels instead of making drones?
Oh, drones are hot, man.
I don't know.
Drones are cool, and they can now refuel them in the air. It's so cool.
All right, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, an alternative radio journalist, Julianne Malveau, speaks on economic justice, Dr. King's legacy. At 10 here, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, the Super Bowl blackout, an everyday occurrence for people living in New Orleans. And Flashpoints remembers Colin Powell's big UN lie that paved the way for an unnecessary 10-year war with Iraq. At 11 on station studio host D. May Roberts previews the 36th Portland International Film Festival with Bill Foster, executive director of the Northwest Film Festival. She also speaks with Portland filmmaker Brian Lindstrom, whose documentary Alien Boy, The Life and Death of James Chassie, will air at the festival. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan talks with Julia Dolan of the Portland Art Museum about the exhibit Carrie Mae Weems, Three Decades of Photography and Video, all this and more, coming up today on KBOO.
Yeah, it's really good.
All right, before people get carried away with flights of fancy about unmanned drones delivering nuclear...
Flights of fancy about flights?
Right, you like that?
I like that.
About unmanned drones delivering nuclear payloads.
Well, that's...
Let's just take a breath here.
Yeah, okay.
Very, very unlikely for a number of reasons that have...
Technological reasons.
Basic physics, yeah. Take, for example, the bombs that were dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Big, massive things required B-29s, the largest bomber that the Army Air Force had in service at the time. It would take something like an intercontinental ballistic missile to deliver one effectively. I suppose you could drop one from an aircraft, but in all likelihood, that would be shot down long before it ever reached its target. So rest easy. No drones are going to nuke any major cities anytime soon.
Okay.
Okay.
But that doesn't really deal with what I am concerned about, which is the loss of due process in assassination.
Indeed.
And, I mean, the technology is so good and apparently so precise, although innocent people have been killed in the process, that we can target somebody in any place in the world, including, and this is really scary, the United States itself, and shoot them, kill them with a conventional weapon delivered by a drone.
Yeah, I agree. This is the latest round in the gradual deterioration of our civil liberties. I think you can look, with regard to the Fourth Amendment in particular, I think you can look at the war on drugs taking the first big bite out of the Fourth Amendment. Then in the post-September 11th climate, you saw it further decimated by passage of the Patriot Act. And by, let's be frank, by the assumption of very, very broad presidential powers on behalf of President G.W. Bush, and Obama, upon assuming office, really did nothing to reverse that assumption of power.
No, I agree with you. And this is, to me, a very, very troubling thing. And I make a joke about the idea of a fly on the wall. But that, you know, one of the things I've learned is that the state, whether it's a county or a city or the state of Oregon or the national government, will always assume any power that it has an opportunity to seize. This is an inherent tension in all systems of government.
Yes.
And if the state is capable of parking a little object in your house,
it will do it.
Damn straight.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones.
Okay.
Who's up next? Ted, good morning. Rod, good morning.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for your airing this tender subject. I live up here in the mid-Columbia region. You know, if I had a big artillery piece, I could hit the Dalles Bridge.
Please, anyway. don't ever say anything like that.
No, I wouldn't. But anyway, some of my family is getting some blood money from the manufacturing of a UAV. And
okay, now, folks, you know UAV is the real name for a drone.
Unmanned aerial vehicle.
Yeah, right. I think that the media, including you guys, you know, when you say things like drones or marijuana, you know, the real name for it is cannabis. The real name for these machines are unmanned aerial vehicles because they're not drones. You know, they are busy. They are hard workers.
Okay.
All right.
And so, anyway, I'm not much for weaponized drones, UAVs.
Uh-huh.
And,
But this is a growth industry. This is a growth industry. Bend is counting on this. Right near you on the.
I understand.
Bingen is a big plant.
I understand because Kansas, you know, Wichita and Salinas, Kansas. There's the weaponized ones are being made there, and that's what's coming to Bend.
Ah.
But now in Bingen is in situ, which makes one of these UAVs that allows them to target their weaponized aircraft, whether they're manned or unmanned aircraft. The ones that are made here, actually, I love them. They were a great thing. The guy that invented it, that's the last thing he was thinking about was, you know, targeting it as a weapon. They were trying to use it for studying our world and our airspace and all that. And I can assure you that, once again, I'm being facetious, but if any of those UAVs come around here, we do have shotguns.
Okay, man.
And so all I really got to say is that there's a huge financial interest in the Mid-Columbia, and even right up there in Boardman, where we have our secret airspace up there.
Well, yeah, you know, I didn't know there was a naval testing spot in Boardman until I read this material about the Chinese wind farm.
Yeah, they were trying to invest here, and they got shut down because they're not going to move that Boardman thing for anybody.
No, of course not. And of course, it is Boeing, it is In-Situ, it is many other companies who see an enormous opportunity. Here we have an economic depression, let's call it what it is. People need work. It's just so rational and so logical to slide seamlessly from what exists to these futuristic devices that are buildable and are being, in fact, used in warfare, and let's call it warfare because it is, in the Middle East and elsewhere.
Absolutely, and I'm in total agreement about us letting our human dignity be pulled away from us. You know, slowly the rug is being pulled out from underneath of us for those that hadn't noticed. So, you know, the economic thing here in the Gorge is critical because this has always been an agricultural, which is seasonal labor, and boom and bust economy, like harvesting wood.
Right.
Is a boom and a bust, and a boom and a bust. And the UAV systems, I'm really intrigued by them. What a lot of fun it would be to fly them. But as far as using them as a weapon and weaponizing them, we got to stop it.
Okay. Hey, listen, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate your perspective.
Joe. Thanks, Abe.
You bet.
You guys are great. Keep it up. This is Rod Allen up in the Great Northwest.
Okay. All right, thanks for the call.
Hey, drones, which are UAVs, are coming to the police or law enforcement agency and certainly to the federal government near you.
And Seattle's got one, at least one already.
Well, we know Seattle police I think they have two, but I'm not sure, of these devices. They can go, you know, they can go into any airspace. The technology of optics now is such that they can spy to a quarter inch accuracy of their optics. There is really a significant loss of privacy. Beyond that, they can be weaponized and used to assassinate. And apparently, according to the white paper that NBC released, there is no limit except our trust or faith in the government, which is not very high.
No.
All right, let's hear from you.
All right, who else do we have?
231-8187.
Chris, good morning. Chris, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. So actually, more accurately, you can call these the actual drone itself is the unmanned aerial vehicle, but more accurately, you would refer to it as an unmanned aerial system.
Yeah.
Because there's also a whole lot of personnel that go into, especially when you're talking about the ones that are armed, weaponized with the Hellfire missiles that they use to kill, al-Zarqawi. It takes up to 200 personnel to launch and recover these things and run them.
Well, yeah, see, so it's a nice job, although we have had or at least one suicide of a guy feeling guilty because he essentially assassinated civilians.
Yeah, and actually I read this really fascinating article that talked about, people theorized about it being like a video game and a desensitizing experience, but I read this article that talked about actually that it's quite the opposite when you spend a 12-hour shift watching a person and their family waiting for the moment when you can blow them up, and you actually gain this intimacy that usually you wouldn't.
I hope I never have that job.
Right, well, that's up to you. I think you're doing okay over at PTC, right? So OSU is really out front on this in terms of applying for a license for 2015, I think, is when they want to start using airspace around the Corvallis area. And what's really driving this in Oregon is that there was an economic opportunity zone that was set up, an airspace that was set up in central Oregon because of the low population density to test regular aircraft. And then for some reason, the bottom fell out, right? Boeing moved their headquarters. Some things went a little weird. And so they were sitting on this opportunity, and then the drones came up. And so Central Oregon really saw in that the opportunity to make use of this airspace. And so that's been part of the reason for, you know, this being kind of an economic driver in Oregon. And then I wanted to say that you guys had an opportunity to kind of, you know, poke our state legislators about, you know, the ties to corporate interests, you know, as you know, constituents that are more important than the actual people who vote for them to put them in office. You know, when the Republican legislator said, "I'm surrounded by drones. I've got Boeing and in situ," and you know, it's like that. I felt like that was an opportunity to say, you know what? I understand that you've probably got a lot of pressure to create jobs and whatnot. But again, you know, why aren't we working harder to bring solar panels or, you know, windmill manufacturers to Oregon, as opposed to, you know, just being beholden to this military-industrial complex.
Well, believe me, that we knew that opportunity was there. I saw in this case a couple of legislators from both major parties looking to proactively restrain the use of these technologies to stop them from further abridging our civil rights. So in this case, I wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Well, and also I don't think that strategically, I don't want to sound defensive here, but and I'm not, strategically, this is not time or the place to be attacking these guys. They've been willing to participate, to let us know what the heck they're up to. Right. There'll be plenty of opportunities to discuss this issue further. We're breaking news here, and you don't see it on any of the TV stations. You don't hear it on any of the news stations. Maybe after this show you will. This is important, and we want to get the facts out now. But I want to give some other folks an opportunity, okay?
Hey, thanks, sir.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. All right, who's next, Steve? Dave. Good morning, Dave.
Hi, just a quick comment. Although it was mentioned by a previous caller, I think there are parts of the country where the greatest danger from drones will be the shattered pieces of them that the locals have shot down.
Oh, yeah. That will happen.
Remember, well, it is legal in some parts of this dumb hick country of ours to buy a very high-powered, very long-range sniper rifle that could pick you or me off at about a quarter of a mile distance.
Let's not go there too far. Thanks for the call, though. You've made a good point. All right. It's 231-8187. We're talking about drones.
You know somebody's going to shoot one of these things down. It's going to happen.
Well, probably.
Yeah.
The Iranians have shot them down. All right.
All right. Who's next? Mike, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for the show.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you reaching out to legislators.
Yeah.
Occasionally they try to do the right thing.
Very good. I was a couple weeks ago up near Crown Point and the gorge on the Oregon side looking north across to the Washington side. And I definitely watched a military drone flying from the east to the west.
Mm. Could you hear it? Could you actually hear it? That's what I was kind of curious about.
Oh, that's a really good question.
You might not have noticed.
I had to strain. I did not hear it until I saw it. And then when I saw it, I thought, is that hum? Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. It wasn't small. I thought, my, that's a small helicopter. And then, sure enough, it was definitely a drone.
Well, they vary in size. I mean, seriously, they vary enormously in size. And as we heard, there is technology being developed to keep them refueled, which means they can be up there 24/7.
Yeah, oh, sure. And they can hover, and they can, whatever. And
well, the technologies are there. It's just a matter of whether it's, unfortunately, I think it's really whether or not the government's willing to pay for it. And if there's a profit, somebody will make them, and there'll be jobs. So it's pretty hard to stop once it's out of the box. It's very hard to stop something like this. And as has been pointed out, it's a technology that any nation can afford to develop.
Yeah, but they also need the secret airspace of the Great Northwest.
Well, it's very useful. That's true.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's we are different. Very useful to the program because we have large spaces, open spaces. I barely saw this thing, and I was looking. I mean, it was basically on the Washington side, hugging the Washington side. It was a long, long ways away, and well, what is that? A couple miles, I guess. And I still saw it, but I just caught it out of the corner of my eye.
Well,
it wasn't high, so you wouldn't be able to see it in the background of the blue sky.
That's interesting.
So even if you were down low, you would be looking up and probably seeing trees behind it. So you probably wouldn't see much.
Okay.
So
well,
and also, I have a question. Isn't it true that the special federal judge or court that rubber stamps illegal search and seizure? That's just a technicality to make sure that they can do, you know, basically whatever they want. They always have been wiretapping everything else and surveillance. It's just that can it be used in court or not? That's the only thing.
Yeah, I don't even know which part of the judicial system has jurisdiction over these things. This is a new sort of thing.
I will make you a promise, I make this to our audience. This is an issue that we're very interested in. We're going to periodically really follow up on it and follow legislation and also follow this work. And I have to praise Isikoff from NBC in having gotten a hold of this white paper and pushing hard to find out what exactly the U.S. government feels that it can do to individuals without due process. And it appears right now that they can pretty much kill anybody they think might be a bad guy. And the definition of bad guy is quite unclear. But anyway, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
All right, 231-8187. You know, it's interesting. When we last time we talked very seriously about melanoma, and we had a woman who's a cancer survivor and a very effective fighter against her cancer, and we had a lot of women callers. Now, I don't want to draw some kind of weird conclusion, but I wish we had more women calling on subjects like this. And as it happens, we have a woman. Charlotte, you're on the air.
Yeah, I think it's a very good subject for everyone to hear about, and I really appreciate the fact that you did have it on air today and will follow through on it. I have a more mundane thing to add, although I appreciate everything else that was said before, which is that I think drone is a very appropriate name because the horrible droning sound. And in all the discussion, I do hope that there's some consideration not only for airspace and safety and stuff like that, but the reason that there are issues around airports particularly where there's constant sounds of the planes and the ways that the planes fly over the city, the drone sounds, just by listening, by looking at the news about what happens like in Pakistan and some of these other countries where the drones are used a lot, it literally drives the people in faraway villages crazy to have the constant sound of the drones above them because they can hear them all the time, and it's very, very irritating and penetrating sound.
Well, yes.
So I just wanted to bring up that one additional.
I don't think we're
going to
stop calling them drones.
For consideration, actually, in all the discussion.
No, and I think you made a good point, and I thank you for the call. I noticed that during the most recent attack by Israel on the Gaza Strip, you could hear in the news reports the sound of these machines in the sky. The Israelis, I believe, used a large number of them during that particular assault. Anyway.
Yeah, even in news reports, I've heard them.
Really?
You know, another reason I think drone is an appropriate term is because there's a sort of a hive mentality at play here. These things are not autonomous. They're all being controlled by this central nervous system, as it were. Somebody in a booth of thousands of miles away.
But the really important point here is there's no due process. There's no constitutional safeguards. This is war by extra means, extraordinary means, justified by 9/11, essentially. And we as citizens, have, as often happens in war, lost complete control of the process. So I want to thank you for the call, and we're going to take a lot more calls, hopefully.
Bye.
231-8187. Take a deep breath here.
I'm going to quote directly from this white paper.
Okay, this is the white paper that NBC got a hold
of. Let's
give them credit.
Section 2 reads, the department, that's the State Department, assumes that the rights afforded by the Fifth Amendment's Due Process Clause, as well as the Fourth Amendment, attach to a U.S. citizen even while he or she is abroad. So you're still an American wherever you are on the globe, right? The U.S. citizenship of a leader of al-Qaeda or its associated forces, however, does not give that person constitutional immunity from attack.
Because the presumption being that al-Qaeda is an enemy with whom we are currently at war? Is that the idea?
That's right. The Due Process Clause would not prohibit a lethal operation of the sort contemplated here. But there it is.
Yeah, it's right there. And you know, the government decides this guy is preaching against the United States. This guy has associations with people who are associated with al-Qaeda or other terrorist organizations. Therefore, that guy is an enemy of the United States. Doesn't matter whether he was born in Texas or wherever. Therefore, we can knock him off. And his family,
that's
apparently.
Right. And let's face it, too. I'm sure the military and to the president as commander-in-chief, the use of drones is tremendously attractive politically because it allows you to, first of all, feed companies like Boeing and General Dynamics and whoever else is building these things. And you don't have to actually put any flesh and blood Americans at any risk. There's no downside for them.
Except, of course, we already have seen one suicide, at least in Oregon, of a guy who was operating drones who felt so guilty about killing people.
I don't think that's keeping the president up at night.
I suspect not. Yeah. We have another caller, 231-8187.
Who's up, Steve? Renee, good morning.
Hey, good morning. The lady that was just on reminded me of an issue that happened during World War II where the Stuka dive bombers out of Nazi Germany would terrorize people.
Right, because of the sound of them.
Yes. And, you know, maybe that's what's really going on here, just a fear factor.
Well, there's certainly a fear factor, and it's certainly very annoying and very disturbing. But remember that we already have 50,000?
Don't have that many yet.
But that's
about 7,000 in the Pentagon.
But that's the plan. Oh my gosh, we're out of time. We will cover the subject of drones another time.
Yeah. Renee, thank you for the call. I'm sorry that we ran out of time.
No problem.
We'll be with you. You want to stay tuned to cable. We are actually breaking news today.
Hey, thanks for listening, and we'll be back at you next time.
Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Tune in Wednesday, February 6th at 6 p.m. for Treasures from the KBOO Vault. We are celebrating our 45th anniversary by looking at our past and sharing precious recordings with you. This month, we'll listen to an interview with Art Dilworth, recorded in 1977 by KBOO's own George Page. We'll also hear a speech recorded in 1992 by Dick Gregory. Again, that's February the 6th at 6 p.m. here at KBOO Portland, your community radio station for 45 years.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, Julianne Malveaux speaks on economic justice, Dr. King's legacy. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, the Super Bowl blackout, an everyday occurrence for people living in New Orleans. And Flashpoints remembers Colin Powell's big UN lie that paved the way for an unnecessary 10-year war with Iraq. At 11 on stage and studio, host Demay Roberts previews the 36th Portland International Film Festival with Bill Foster, executive director of the Northwest Film Festival. She also speaks with Portland filmmaker Brian Lindstrom, whose documentary Alien Boy, The Life and Death of James Chassis, will air at the festival. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan talks with Julia Dolan of the Portland Art Museum about the exhibit Carrie Mae Weems, Three Decades of Photography and Video. Thanks, KABU members, for your ongoing support. If you are not a KABU member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Now here's Alternative Radio.
Now, what does all this have to do with Dr. King? It is part and parcel of where we stand this day when we talk about claiming the dream. The dream was a dream of economic justice. The dream was a dream of civil rights and economic justice, and we can't leave that economic justice piece out of it. Dr. King said, the movement must address itself to the question of restructuring the whole of American society. There are 40 million poor people here. That was in 1968, about the same number now. And one day we must ask the question why.
That's Julianne Malveaux, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Julianne Malveaux, Economic Justice, Dr. King's Legacy. The conventional media image of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. has him frozen in time at the Lincoln Memorial on August 28, 1963, giving his inspirational I Have a Dream speech. Little attention is paid to King's remarkable political and social evolution in the last 5 years of his life. He became a trenchant critic of the Vietnam War. In his classic sermon at the Riverside Church in New York, he denounced the war and the giant triplets of racism, materialism, and militarism. King increasingly saw the link between economic justice and racial equality, and insisted that one was impossible without the other. His final days were spent in Memphis, where he was actively supporting a strike by black sanitation workers, and he was planning to launch a Poor People's March on Washington, D.C. An assassin's bullet ended Dr. King's life on April 4th, 1963.